Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll him out, here's some ground. And he's got to go.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, Sean Desay is back in the building for this week as we cover everything in the world of mixed martial arts, brought to you by Gun Lake Casinos and Onnit Supplements, online at onnit.com/wowshow. Lots of stuff to talk about. It's one of those months that we've got 3 out of the 4 weeks. There's an event, so there's tons to talk about. We will talk about UFC on Fox 7. There was a bit of controversy, and we'll get to that. But we start where we start this weekend, with UFC 159 in the Jersey City. Going to be John Jones against Chael Sonnen, the baddest man alive.
Yes.
This is a fascinating fight. There's been a war of, well, one person has been doing a war of words. The other guy's been pretending he doesn't feel like selling pay-per-views.
Yeah.
And then complaining about those pay-per-view buys.
Speaking of, yeah, UFC on Fox 7, that was one of the highlights of the night, was an actual interview to see Chael Sonnen do his interview. Did you catch that, Sean?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And he was talking, and then John Jones really didn't have anything else to say, which, of course, feeds into everything that we want to think about this fight, which is Chael Sonnen's got a shot. Look, he's got the young guy on the ropes. Oh, my gosh, he won't even engage with him on national TV. Chael Sonnen's got him right where he wants him. He's going to defeat John Jones. He's innocent. Mentally, he's not a bam. This is going to be a first-round knockout.
I know who I'm going to hire if I ever throw a show.
We bought in all the way.
See, I'm all in, and I'm all in for a number of reasons. Number one, because if Chael, and I understand that the likelihood of Chael Sonnen beating John Jones isn't as nearly as high as I would like it to be. That said, if Chael is able to do the impossible and beat John Jones, for me, the UFC becomes super interesting all of a sudden.
Dude.
Super, super interesting.
See, and I understand.
The pay-per-views are going to go up, man. Those prices are going to be like $75.
It's going to be like WWE WrestleMania.
Yeah. Every week.
The template.
Right.
True. It probably will.
$79 now.
Is it $79?
Wow.
Yes. I've never bought a whatever.
Yeah, go ahead and pretend over there.
No, seriously.
I don't even know the letters.
The last time I saw any that kind of wrestling was like the Von Erichs, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's Tornado. Yeah. Very good.
That's all I got. Freebirds or whatever.
I see where you're going with this interesting statement, Eric, where everything's going to become very ratcheted up as far as promotion of fights and calling
guys out.
And things like that. Is that not where you're going?
Where I'm going is I see a post-apocalyptic world where Chael Sonnen has essentially ruined all of the super fights that Dana White and the Fertittas want to cash their checks on. Because if John Jones loses to Chael Sonnen, yes, people will want to see Anderson and John Jones, but not nearly as much as they wanted to see Anderson and John Jones when John Jones was undefeated and had a belt.
Right, but then you're going to have 10 other contenders that are stepping up. There's going to be a lot more talking. Chael Sonnen now gets to fight that whole division before he ever has to fight John Jones again. Don't tell me that's not going to happen, that he's going to get at least 3 or 4, where he gets to yell at Machida about not speaking English, where he gets to yell at, Rashad Evans about not speaking English. Whatever he wants to say,
right,
he's going to say it.
And you kind of hit on a topic of people who've been paying attention to Chael's shtick as of late, and that it's kind of got some retreads in it. He doesn't really adapt it so much for the person that he's going after. So, to your point, he probably could say doesn't speak English to everybody that he fights for the rest of his life.
Right, yeah, he's just going to keep doing that at this point, and everybody's going to eat it up, and they're going to pay to see him fight. Does he have a realistic shot against John Jones? Probably not realistic. Does he have a shot? Of course he does. It's a fight. And as much as people want to drag Chael Sonnen through the mud, which we've seen a little bit of in these past couple weeks, I know Deadspin tore him apart last week in an article, and they said a lot of the things that he was doing were racially tinged, and that he shouldn't even be in there with some of these guys he's fighting. Clearly, he should be in there. He beat the world champion at 185 for 4.5 minutes and got caught.
4.5 rounds.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 4.5 rounds, and then 4.5 minutes of that fifth round, essentially.
Yes.
And then got caught. He's a world-class fighter. He's beaten Michael Bisping. He's beaten the other guys that you would talk about in that division. Now, him jumping up and getting this fight, Of course, there's a question about it, but let's remember, this didn't originate because Chow kept talking and talking and talking.
Oh, no, yeah.
It originated because he wanted to take the fight originally. John Jones ducked it.
On 8 days' notice, too.
And I remember the week after that happened, we sat on this show going, what the heck is wrong with John Jones? Why won't he just take this fight? And again, I'm usually a guy that's, I'm an advocate for fighters on that regard. You shouldn't have to go in there against a guy you didn't prepare against. Gegard Mousasi, a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know, what he had to do was not enviable at all, and I don't think he necessarily came out of it great. But this was John Jones, your world champion, against a lighter weight guy that's coming off a loss. A lot of people still think he should have took the fight back then. That's the genesis of this. Now, of course, does Chow start talking a lot after the world champion ducks him? Yeah.
Of course.
A lot of guys would, and a lot of guys would do it because they don't get a lot of opportunities to have a champion say, no, I'm not going to fight you. Because champs usually, as far as MMA goes, end up fighting everybody they have to fight. And this was an instance where that didn't happen. That's how this fight happened. Chael Sonnen, does he deserve to be in there for the light heavyweight title of the world? He's not the first guy on the list, but he's certainly not past number 10. So he's in there.
Well, and Ken, as the guy on the show who pays a lot closer attention to the mathematics and the economy of MMA, and specifically the UFC, the UFC has an issue with John Jones, is that the fans are not on the hype train. They're not buying as many pay-per-views when he shows up. So he's this undefeated, essentially, champion. You know, the disqualification for Hamill aside, he's essentially undefeated, and they're not getting the buy-in that they want. So from a business perspective, you put in one of your top five of all-time pay-per-view draws in Chael Sonnen against John Jones and try and turn this around. The unfortunate part is, regardless of outcome, John hasn't taken advantage of the situation. And by that, I mean, if Chael's going to play the part of the bad guy in the traditional WWE model, as I'm going to be the guy that talks all the trash, John has not taken this moment to be the good guy.
No, he's not cashed in yet, and it's still something where he could after the fight. Let's all remember going back to that Damian Maia fight with Anderson Silva. That's when we were all done. I look at John Jones now, and I see that Anderson Silva that we saw in that fight where we were angry with him. We don't want to watch another Anderson Silva fight. And what the heck is he doing in there? I don't care that he's basically undefeated in this division. I don't really want to pay to see him anymore. We're kind of starting to get that a little bit with John Jones. I think John's a little more dynamic, has competition with better names than Anderson had at that time. But we all know what the next fight was and what happened to Anderson Silva after that. He fought Chael Sonnen, and Chael Sonnen, you know, gave him a whooping for 4.5 rounds. And I don't know if necessarily a little adversity doesn't help John here, if he can fight through it and get over the top of it. Because ever since then, not only did you have Chael Sonnen talking up Anderson Silva and talking about being the champion, he also knocked off that air of invincibility with Anderson Silva. Even though Anderson Silva at that point had lost a couple fights, he had become an entirely different fighter in his time in the UFC. If he's able to wear down John Jones or take him into other rounds or take him into the third or the fourth or even get to a decision with John Jones is going to be a more marketable fighter if he can strive and survive in that environment, and he will thrive in his career because of it.
But if he can't seize that moment now, I don't really think he can seize it after the fight.
And he's going to be a guy that, yeah, we could see him foreseeably for the next 5 years hold that belt, and if something interesting doesn't happen within that division, he's not going to make as much money as he should. And Nike deals aside, the UFC looks directly at these pay-per-view dollars,
and well, they should, because that's their
money.
And so that makes this a very, very interesting fight. And you can say anything you want to me about Chael Sonnen not having a chance in this, and I would certainly give you your minute in the sun to say that. I will, however, say,
what sun?
Well, eventually there'll be sun.
Oh, okay. I'm just making sure. I'm a little confused.
It's still winter in the home base for some reason.
It's still snowing here, but eventually we'll get some sun. But Chael, certainly, I believe, has gotten inside John's head. And it remains to be seen what that's going to do to John. We'll talk about Bisping and Alan Belcher here in a second. And we'll talk to Alan Belcher later on the show, who will tell you that when those things happen to him, he feels he becomes a better fighter. He likes the guy to be a jerk so that he can get emotionally invested and put on a great performance. He says, in Alan Belcher's words, that when he's not emotionally invested, those are the ones that he loses when he's just showing up to work. So if John is emotionally invested in this, and I found it interesting in all of the interviews that John said that John was particularly put off about Chael Sonnen saying terrible things about Anderson's family, and that was the line, and that Chael, at least to my knowledge, hasn't crossed that line. I find that to be very interesting, that he knew where the line was and he was going to go around it, essentially, and rile up John Jones in a different way. But as we saw last Saturday night on Fox, he hasn't really seemed to rile him up because he just gets no reaction whatsoever. And that can mean one of two things.
Is that a seething John Jones?
Right. That was one of two things. Either John is so mad that he can't put himself together an answer, or John is unfazed. And I guess we'll find that out tomorrow night.
It's a situation, too, where Nick Diaz says the same things. You got to have a reason to hate a guy if you want to go in and have to hurt him. And you wonder, with a guy like John Jones, as good as he is and as talented as he is, he destroys guys. Really, it doesn't seem like he has any ill will, though. What
yeah,
is a
he
guy,
treats it like a business, for sure.
He does, and he should, and that's what we always say. So you have to wonder, which side of that coin is it going to land on? Eric, you make a good point. Is he there? Is he so angry, and he's going to keep it contained, or is he nonplussed about it? And let's say he's angry, and he's really seething. Does that help him focus, or does that make him lose focus? We don't know any of these answers yet with John Jones. That's the amazing thing. I mean, he's probably top two pound for pound in the world. That's where I would have him. I don't know where you and your friends have him right now on the UFC
list. That is where we have him.
So it's amazing to see a guy that is this young and that good, and he really hasn't had a lot of those questions answered because he is so good.
And so we'll have to find out tomorrow night, UFC 159 on pay-per-view. The co-main event is two guys that hate each other more than Chael Sonnen hates John Jones, and Michael Bisping and Alan Belcher. And this has started because Alan feels that Bisping has been ducking him for far too long, not wanting to fight him. So this fight finally comes around, and Alan decides, to seize the moment. And he puts together a YouTube video where he bets Michael Bisping a $300,000 car. If he knocks out Michael Bisping in round one, Michael has to offer something else. But if Michael is able to knock out Alan Belcher, he will get this $300,000 car.
Has Bisping taken up that offer yet?
Well, what Bisping did is he did a return video where he and his youngster friends in the UK decided to offer up a smart car, one of those tiny little trashy cars that wasn't even close to $300,000. So, no, he has not taken the bet. But this becomes an interesting war of words in that both guys coming off of losses, so they could kind of be, not that they'd be on the bubble, but certainly on the bubble of being in title contention and getting back into those universes where they need to be. We've talked about Michael Bisping, about being one of the most busy guys in that division who is yet to get to the promised land.
Can't get through.
No, he can't get through. Alan Belcher was on a tear and lost that decision to Yushin Okami, but came back from a terrible eye injury before that fight, so he's had some adversity and come back. I like this fight. I think it's really interesting. Belcher in that Palhares fight proved that he's got a ridiculous jiu-jitsu defense system, that he can get out of all of these crazy positions.
And he's not scared either.
And not scared.
He'll stay in that guard.
Yeah, and he'll stay there and do his work. And if you haven't seen his video series, we'll talk about it in a little bit when we get him on the show. But he has some tremendous jiu-jitsu escapes. So it's not going to be jiu-jitsu, and I don't think Bisping's going to do that anyway. It's going to end up being a stand-up bout. And I still think that Bisping's suspect chin is going to be the issue here in this fight.
Yes, because we can count three good knockouts that Bisping's gone through.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them wasn't a knockout, but it was a knockdown by Dennis King right after the Dan Henderson moment. And I think, and Alan Belcher is not a small guy. That dude's Muay Thai, and his legs, his body's built, everything. He's strong. He's very strong.
He's built like a big Muay Thai guy, you know, who's kind of adapted the game for MMA.
And he can pick up people and slam them on their face. Patrick Cote, I think. Yeah, he just pancaked him. So
and you know, and Alan's one of those guys who looks, to use Ken's term, nonplussed about all. That's a job to him. He goes in there and he does what needs to get
done.
Plus,
he's got that Johnny Cash tattoo. Come on.
Right.
That's awesome.
It looks like a fat Elvis. I'm sorry. I love the idea behind the tattoo, but it didn't really execute well.
Or Kim Jong-il or whoever it looks like. Whatever.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
But you have to talk about a guy, too, like Bisping. You mentioned the big knockouts, and they're kind of, you can put them on the reel. You put the Hendo knockout on there, the Wanderlei Silva knockouts on there, right?
Yeah.
Is that who you put on there?
And then
he lost in a TKO where Vitor just beat the heck out of him. He's getting older. He's a 34-year-old fighter. I mean, and that's when we start saying that about these fighters, too. We look right at about 32, 33, 34. Where does chin play on a fighter as he gets older, Sean?
The thing is here is it depends on how many times that bell's been rung as you're getting older. If you haven't taken any damage, you can still continue. Perfect example, perfect example would be Anderson Silva. Here's a guy who's never really been knocked out.
No, and ever. The only fight he's been tested in was against Chael Sonnen.
Chael Sonnen.
Beat on him for 20 minutes.
And we've seen him actually say you can practice blocking with your face, mm-hmm. which I...
What is that, Like Water, that documentary?
Yeah, the yeah. Like Water documentary, yeah.
So here's a guy, Anderson's 38 now?
Yes.
Okay, so, and I know Michael's much younger, but Michael's been knocked out more devastating than Anderson. So for that analogy or whatever we're talking about, Michael's—he's in trouble.
This could be an interesting one. You say if Belcher even lands, we're gonna—we're all gonna wonder.
I think if he touches his chin, it's gonna be game
over. That's gonna be it.
Yeah, it's game over.
That's simple.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see though if Allen decides that he's gonna do that, or if Allen's gonna try and drown him because of the bad blood. You know, and I think either are a possibility. Also on the main card, you've got a lot of great fights. Roy Nelson, Czech Congo, their record just about the same. Should be a great heavyweight bout. You've got another light heavyweight bout that everybody should be interested in. Because if you want to know what's going to be better, a wrestler or a jiu-jitsu practitioner, literally the best jiu-jitsu practitioner, I think, in the organization, in Vinny Magalhaes taking on Phil Davis, is going to be an awesome bout. Jim Miller and a guy who you may not know in Pat Healy is going to be an absolute scrap.
That should be fun.
And the third fight in UFC women's history will also happen on the prelims. Sarah McMahon, undefeated, taking on Sheila Gaff. That'll be a great fight. And one last one that I want you to pay attention to if you're going to watch the prelims is that Khabibov is back on FX, and if you don't remember him, he's the one that suplexed his first opponent in the UFC into a TKO. So if you like a guy who could just drop you on your head till you're out cold,
old school baby,
Khabibov is your guy. All right, all of that and more on the Twitter page at Wow Show or Facebook at Wow Show when we come back. UFC on Fox 7. Did Benson win? Should have Gil won? Was there really a Cesar Gracie judge in the night in San Jose? We'll talk about it next. It's Way of the Warrior. Take the pitchfork from the...
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, Ken Evans, Sean Dizay from Triumph MMA, breaking down the world of mixed martial arts powered by Gunlake Casinos and Onnit Supplements online at onnit.com/wowshow. We had UFC on Fox 7 this past weekend. You like the theme song?
The NFL? Oh, that's great,
or
man.
The Fox theme song.
Guess who we got in for you last week?
I take it, so I leave a week and then you guys do all these upgrades. I get it.
Well, yeah, we had Kurt Menefee in for Sean Dizay.
Yeah, we had Kurt from Fox on to fill in the void.
So, I like the little remix version of that, too. It's pretty cool.
We try. So we had a great night of fights. Build for the insider as Strikeforce versus UFC. For those of you keeping track at home, it ended up being 50-50. So there was no solution to the which is better, Strikeforce versus UFC, if you were...
Oh, no. How will we sleep tonight if we don't have a result? The arguments will continue.
Hey, at least now that what was that game we used to play? Who the
hell is that guy?
Yeah, well, we kind of know who that guy is.
We know who the hell some of them are.
Sean Dizay's favorite game, Who the Hell Is That Guy, is officially over at this point. All right, so.
Sad day.
We had a couple stories in the prelims that I want to talk to Sean briefly about, and that is clearly the change that Dwayne Ludwig has made to the Alpha Male camp can't be understated, I think.
Well, I'm trying not to laugh because I keep thinking of the Tommy Toehold
right,
and the kids.
Yeah, Tommy Toehold had a brilliant... If you haven't seen Tommy's video this week, make sure you do it. But, they're on an absolute run right now. And he's the X factor, I think. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, what can a coach go in and do it in that short of a time to garner these kind of results?
Well, before we get really deep into it, Master Tong, who's usually the head Muay Thai coach for Alpha Male, is a great, great coach. He knows his technique. Very, very traditional Muay Thai. I think he comes from Tiger Muay Thai.
Yep.
Really good guy. He's that dude that's always in the background with the sunglasses on and all that good stuff. But what Dwayne was bringing to the camp is the hybrid version of K-1 style of striking, which is a little bit different than traditional Muay Thai. You know how you guys see it in Thailand? They just come out to the middle of the ring. They kind of have one leg, you know, tapping the floor, and then just kind of stand there and trade elbows and kicks
yep.
and hang on in the clinch, and they get a sweep. Yay, you know, great. But in K-1, that doesn't happen. And, you know, they designed the rules so that you have a higher chance of knockouts. And Dwayne's, you know, a K-1 veteran. So by him coming to the camp, he's probably teaching these guys, hey, Muay Thai is great. Don't get me wrong. You need it. But we got to change this into more of a MMA type of striking.
But what you're looking at here and what you saw on FX was Dillashaw, Alpha Male, TKO. Benavidez, Alpha Male, TKO. Mendez, TKO in round one in a minute. And so, you know, whether or not you're into the nerdy side of mixed martial arts and the UFC in that what a coach could bring to a team, Dwayne has certainly changed something there in the culture that these guys have either figured, you know, that light switch has gone on and they've melded the two together and put these things together. But Team Alpha Male was the big winner, I thought, on Saturday night. You know,
well,
all things
finishes
considered,
are always the best way to win.
Well, I mean, if you're going to look at the whole card, as I mean, it was a great card.
It was a great card. Yeah.
If you saw the Facebook prelims and then you saw the prelims on FX, if you just saw what was on Fox, you saw two great fights. And then, oh, a palate cleanser, I guess we could call it, between Cormier and Mir.
Wow, this is where you're going with that?
Well, I mean, it gives
was
us
it
a minute
really
to
that
catch
bad?
Up.
I didn't think it would.
I mean, to the, I don't want to say the average fan, because you're more than just the average fan. But...
No, I'll give you the, I didn't see anything there that was particularly interesting until the last round, when it looked like Frank Mir knew he was going to lose the fight. So if he would have fought with more of that sense of urgency, I'm wondering through the fight, if Daniel Cormier could have kept up.
Right, and I agree with you there, but you didn't find it interesting how Daniel, who is the smaller guy, the lighter weighter guy, was able to just pretty much control him up against the fence.
Oh, I was impressed by that, but we said this would happen last week because that is Cormier's game, is that he wants to get him up and against that fence, and he just wants to, you know, snuggle up inside his arms and just kind of hold him there. That's what he has to do. He doesn't want to roll around on the ground. Not a lot of guys want to roll around on the ground with Frank Mir. You could lose something. An arm, a leg.
I thought he fought a very smart fight.
I thought it was a brilliant fight.
It was a smart fight, but we're watching this card, and I got to see some of the undercard, and I watched the Facebook fights, and then right before this fight, you know, we had Goldberg come out and say, what an amazing night of KOs so far. We've had 8 KOs or TKOs. And then I knew it was game over, especially with two heavyweights walking
good
in.
Good job, Goldberg.
Yeah, and then that was a fight where, you know, it was all right, but it's one of those, and we've had a couple of these now, where we see the guy that we want to see take on the champion in that division show up for a fight, still win his fight, and we have less confidence that he can beat anybody in that division that matters or the champion. And I look at this fight, and I don't know what Daniel Cormier is going to go do to those elite couple of heavyweights in this division. What's he going to do to Velasquez? What's he going to do against Dos Santos? What's he going to do against a guy, let's even say, like Overeem? Can he do that to those guys? I don't know. I mean, Frank's a big guy. He got bigger after that first Brock fight, and he knew he had to get bigger. But he's not as naturally a big guy as those guys are. Does Cormier even have a shot against those guys after you see him in this fight? I don't know.
I was just impressed. A UFC debut. And I think a guy who goes out there in the co-main event, there's a lot of things against you, a lot of exterior variables against you as a fighter when you're on national TV for the first time, going against an ex-champ, first time in the UFC. I think that's a lot to deal with mentally. And all things considered, I think Frank got started too late, obviously.
Yeah, he did.
And Cormier clearly knew what to do for the first 10 minutes, got stung a bit in the third round, was still able to finish. I thought it was, for me, a much better fight than, let's say, what happens in the main event. Because I'm endlessly frustrated by this division at this point. I'm endlessly frustrated with Benson Henderson and the way that he fights. And I'm interested in the way he's able to negate, like, what a guy like Gil Melendez, a very aggressive fighter who clearly wanted to do something different on Saturday night. He's able to negate those strikes. But for me, I want to see guys that fight to end the fight. Benson is turning into a lightweight GSP, a guy who scores points.
I don't think we're that bad. I mean, because I watched that fight, and it surprised me that there was a lot of discussion and a lot of controversy here, because I watched that fight. I thought he beat Melendez up for the fight, and it wasn't one of those where I thought this round this. I thought he beat Melendez up. Melendez tough as hell. I mean, the guys he scraps with, he's going to be a hard guy to finish no matter what.
No doubt that Gil Melendez is a hard guy to put away. What I will tell you, and when I say I think that Benson is becoming a lightweight GSP, is Benson has had 19 fights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
I know
19 fights. How many fights do you think he's had in the UFC, Ken?
In the UFC, he's had 8, right?
7.
7, okay.
All of them are decisions. Prior to that, the other 12 fights he had 10 finishes and 2 decisions. So here is a guy who is in love with the idea of holding onto the belt, which I can certainly admire. However, I'm somebody who enjoys the sport from the point of view of trying to test yourself against another person to see if your game is better than their game. And right now, I feel that Benson Henderson's game is just to outpoint the other guy, and that's not as exciting for me as, let's say, watching other people fight. For example, we talked in segment one about Jones and Chael Sonnen. That's not going to be a point-scoring fight.
No, it's not, but I don't know if I necessarily agree with a point-scoring
method. You don't have to agree with me.
I think what he's doing in there, I think he's going in there and he's trying to beat guys up. And I think we see this with these lighter weights. We've not seen nearly as many KOs or finishes that you'd like to see in a fight that lasts this long or where you think those opportunities are there. I'm not saying he doesn't have KO power, but again, Gil Melendez, a tough guy to KO. I'm sure of that. I don't think he's fighting not to lose, and there's a difference.
But see, I think the scores disagree with you, because I don't have a problem watching a fight that goes to a decision. That's not what I'm saying. But it's split decision after split decision after controversial decision after controversial decision, because everybody who watches it, the three people in this room could have three different ideas of what happened, and that, to me, you're not fighting to win. The guy who's fighting to win walks out of there and you go, yep, that's the dude who won.
But did you think Gil was fighting to win, or was he just stymied by this game plan?
Gil couldn't get his game off.
No. Gil was, but then Jake Shields told him, hey, you're fighting at the wrong pace. You need to slow it down. I don't know why you would ever tell that to a fighter, especially for a UFC belt. I mean, that's just the most idiotic thing I ever heard.
Well, maybe
why would you take up stand-up advice from Jake Shields anyway? Well, really, Jake, dude, like, Jake's, go out there, dude, and put Ben on his ass and finish this fight.
Jake Shields has been one of the craziest cornermen we've ever seen, where he's just scoring fights.
Gil even said, I took my foot off the gas pedal. Well, good, then you deserve to lose.
Well, I mean,
idiot.
I will say, to Jake Shields' point, we talked about this fight last week, and we said that if anybody was going to drag somebody into that deep water, it was going to be Benson Henderson, not Gil Melendez.
Yeah,
so,
but I would
so maybe Jake was worried about that. I'm with Sean, though. If you're winning a fight and you think you're winning a fight.
Did he win the first round?
I thought that was even. I can't argue with any of them. But if you're asking me,
I gave 1 and 3 to Gil.
I only gave one to Gil.
I gave 2, 4, and 5 to Ben.
But I gave 1 to Gil, and then he let off the gas pedal because Jake Shields told him to, and then you lose the next 4 rounds. Well, guess what? You deserve it.
Yes, but I guess
go to the 3-round fight and finish somebody and come back.
To me, on Benson's side, if you can tell,
Benson's just doing Benson. You can't fault him for that. He's Benson. That's the way he fights.
No.
Get Jose Aldo, we'll have a different fight.
No. Bring me the Benson from WEC.
That dude doesn't exist. Guy doesn't exist anymore.
Is there one guy left that can make Benson Henderson still want to make that fight happen and finish it? Is that the Anthony Pettis fight? Do we need that?
Pettis or Aldo are going to finish that fight.
Yeah. And his motivation, obviously, is to get that loss off his record.
And he won't.
Anthony Pettis.
Pettis will put him on his butt.
But what I will tell you, Sean, is when you go back to that WEC fight between those two guys, I'll watch that all day long.
Sure.
Those are two dudes trying to finish it.
Yeah.
You say that. That was very casual. You say he's going to put the world champion, who has finished every one of his UFC fights with a win. Hasn't finished them. Sorry, Eric was. I could see his eyes.
I was like,
bigger.
Are you talking about Anderson?
No, who are you talking about right now? But I mean, he's the world champion, and he's won every single fight he's had in the UFC.
That's because he won't fight Pettis.
But that was a rather casual way. So is that the fight we want then? The Pettis fight? I think that's the natural winner.
The winner of Pettis or Aldo?
Yeah,
I'd rather see Aldo go whoop him, you know, take out Benson. But the winner between Pettis and Aldo should definitely fight Benson.
But, I mean, Benson Henderson might want that fight just to get – that's the only loss on his record, right, recently?
Who cares what he wants?
I mean, we go back – oh, you've got some – I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's not worried about Ricky Johnson in 2007.
He is not worried about Ricky Johnson.
No. And that'll be next
but
on UFC.
I certainly agree with Sean. I think if Pettis is able to get by Aldo, and I think the way that Pettis has been advancing, that's a fascinating fight to me. And if that happens, and it could – I think Pettis beats Benson.
Do we need a contender fight, though? Because
Not of those two guys.
Nope.
You're going to make Aldo take a contender fight?
No.
Clay Guida, whatever.
No.
Really?
That's what I'm saying. Why are we even making them fight each other? Can't we put one of them up against Benson Henderson now? Do we have another compelling fight?
They're fighting
fight
in August.
For Benson Henderson. Oh, are they lined up for August?
They're lined up for August because they're the two smartest guys in the room, because what you're going to see happen after this is that we're going to get a stupid rematch between Benson Henderson and Gil Melendez, if it hasn't been inked already as we're talking.
Oh, God.
What does that say? Split decision, right? Sean, what does that mean at 155?
That means change that judge.
That means Frankie Edgar. The Frankie Edgar clause is...
Frankie Edgar's coming back? Good.
Yeah, he's going to fight.
Didn't he want the rematch? I thought Frankie wanted the rematch.
The two fights that kicked off Fox were absolutely brilliant. Matt Brown's destruction of Jordan Mean.
Dude! Man versus child, straight up.
It was what a brilliant, brilliant fight.
Straight up.
I was tweeting back and forth with Ken while we were watching it. And I'll tell you guys this, nothing scares me more. No elbows to the head or the eyes or the nose scare me more than a dude elbowing another dude's back. Like, that's, you know.
Really, that's the thing.
Oh, boy. When Matt starts going towards the spine with his elbow, I'm like, no, we're done here. He's not gonna break
his spine.
You don't know. I watched too many Batman movies. We're done there. And then a guy I was really excited to see what was going to happen, because Josh Thompson, a journeyman who's had to suffer outside the organization for far too long, and was one of those guys that could have been going against Benson Henderson on Saturday night, proved that by KOing. I should say TKO, because it was a white towel throw-in and a referee
stoppage.
Dude,
that was a TK. I mean, that was a KO, and you know it was.
KO, Nate Diaz, first time in 25 professional fights. I mean, that's...
That was an impressive win.
That's a coming out party for Josh Thompson.
Win. What was Nate doing? The weird thing about Nate Diaz, and to an extent his brother Nick, we talked about this again last week, is that he clearly, after you see the end of the fight, he was essentially losing that whole fight. But you didn't know it until the fight ended, because those guys tend to eat those kicks and eat those punches and come back and have a weird stance and kind of wobble around, and you're like, oh, maybe that's the Diaz plan. I don't know. So
he did take it good. I mean, honestly, he didn't drop right away. He took the kick. And then he eventually lost his balance.
Well, he took a kick earlier in the fight,
took
too.
Took three of those kicks.
Solid. And again, tough as nails guy, but Josh Thompson just kept coming and didn't want to leave any question about it.
Now, Sean, we got to get to Alan Belcher here in the third segment. Sure. So we only got a short amount of time, but I do want to ask you this question, because they're all out of the same camp. Uh-huh. The Diaz brothers, do they need to switch something up, because they don't fight the same way that, let's say, a Gil Melendez does?
This might sound really, really bad, because he was saying Nate was talking about going to 170, which was dumb, because I remember what Rory McDonald did to him.
Right.
This is going to sound really bad, but I think the Diaz brothers should just go over to Dream and have Melendez just take over in UFC.
I kind of like that idea.
Yeah.
But when you watch those guys fight, you know, Nick
Dream
against,
still exists?
Yes, it does. Nick against GSP and Nate against Jordan. It seems like their time here in this organization is maybe closed.
It is, yeah. I mean, we're talking about those fighters that are doing everything. I mean, did you see Nate even throw one kick? I think
he threw one.
But you know what I'm talking about. He did like a sidekick or something.
Do they need to get away from each other?
No, because I don't know. I just don't think that there's really nowhere for them to go in the UFC. They try to get to the top. They had their chance. They had their moments, and it slipped, or whatever you want to call it. It's just there's nothing there for them.
Dream's got a card this month to be announced.
There you go.
See,
their cardio. Aoki, let's go.
Yeah, their
to
card
be their, announced their cardio in 2 weeks.
Their cardio is as such they could probably do it in 2 weeks. All right, when we come back, Alan Belcher is going to join us talking about Michael Bisping, UFC 159 on pay-per-view this weekend. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search WOW Show.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans and Sean Desay from Triumph MMA, breaking down the world of mixed martial arts. UFC 159 this weekend, going to be headlined by John Jones and Chael Sonnen. And joining us on the line, part of the co-main event, going to be taking on Michael Bisping. Alan Belcher's on the line. Alan, how are you?
I'm great.
Awesome, awesome. Alan Belcher is on the line with us, taking on Michael Bisping this weekend at UFC 159. For those maybe casual fans who haven't been paying attention to the war of words between you two, can you take us back in history and kind of explain how this fight, before the fight, sort of started?
I don't have anything against Michael Bisping personally. Everything that I've seen from him in the ring and on TV, he seems like a jerk. And I've been trying to fight him for years. For whatever reason, the fight hasn't happened, and I don't know, for whatever reason, he doesn't like me, and he likes to resort to name calling and trying to belittle me and try to bully me. So I've just stood up for myself. He he proclaimed to everyone publicly that I would be his easiest fight. He knocked me out in round one, so I challenged him to a bet, and he kind of blew it off, like he didn't want to confidently accept the bet. But
because you bet,
he didn't want to play the game.
That's
fine.
And for those who don't know, Alan, you bet a really, really expensive car, and he kind of made fun of it by going to a car dealership and betting you a Mini Cooper, essentially.
Yeah.
So the fight is this weekend, and you have said in more than one interview, which I find interesting, because we talk to a lot of fighters, and some of them are on your side in the way that this works out, and others are really kind of scared of that way to fight. And you say when you're emotionally invested is when you're at your best, and you feel that this weekend you're emotionally invested, correct?
Absolutely.
And why do you feel that that's something that helps fuel you, that you need to have that emotional tie to get in there and get the job done?
Because... as a fighter, whenever you're too veteran, sometimes you don't grind like you need to, and you don't want it bad enough, and you accept things in the fight. This fight is about not letting Michael Bisping have any edge at all, or not win any part of the fight at all. He can't win one striking exchange, one grappling exchange, and since I'm going into the fight feeling like that, I know that it's going to be good. So your emotions is powerful. Your mind is really strong. So it's going to help me perform better. You know, if someone is you're coming out of a grocery store with your wife and someone attacks your wife or whatever happens, and it's time to fight right then, you know, you don't have time to train for it, right?
Right, yes.
You don't have, you can't say, hey, let me grab my hands up, let me tape my hands and grab my gloves.
Let me get some battle ropes ready and, yeah.
And let me think about my game plan here. It's go time, and you fight right then. And I guarantee you, you're going to kill somebody over your family, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
So, that's my theory on fighting whenever you're emotionally involved. So, I look forward to getting angry and trying to take Michael's head off.
Now, speaking of taking Michael's head off, obviously the bet involved a first-round knockout. But as this war of words has kind of expounded, would you rather knock him out in the first round, or would you like to drag him out for three rounds and, like you said, win every exchange and just suck the will out of Michael Bisping for 15 minutes?
I'll take it any way I can get it. It would be fun. The best way to prove my point would be to, you know, just beat him every which way, and nobody could ever say it was a fluke, but, I mean, I don't really care. At the end of the day, it's all about the W.
Absolutely. UFC 159 this weekend. Alan Belcher taking on Michael Bisping. Before I let you go, I want to talk to you about this Immunity MMA series, because if people have not seen the videos yet, they need to buy the series, because that Triangle 911 escape is sick. Can you talk a little bit about what you're doing?
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. I like to coach people, and you know, I have my gym, I train people, and the platform that I have with the UFC has gave me an opportunity to work with really good people, get coached by people, and also coach people. So I felt like the best way to do it was online. So I have like an online coaching site, and I don't work with a lot of people, but in the spare time that I do have, you know, I like to share techniques. I have my site and all that, but the Immunity series is kind of like all the defenses and counters that I use for leg locks and submissions, all the stuff that I train for in my Husmar Palhares fight. I just felt like I became an expert with leg locks,
right?
Leg locks, and it's a great little system, man. It's six discs, and I put this other disc together called Submissions from Bad Positions. like getting submissions from Mount and Side Control and all these other places.
And it absolutely, if you are into jiu-jitsu, I would highly recommend this because, you know, just talking about the free one that you gave away on Twitter this week, the triangle choke, I mean, the guy's got it. It's a textbook triangle choke, and you still get out of it. So if you have started jiu-jitsu or are sort of into jiu-jitsu, this series is going to be your new best friend, and in the dojo, you're going to look like a rock star. So I highly recommend the Immunity MMA series from Alan Belcher.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, we put a lot of work into it, and it's going to help a lot of people for sure.
All right, my man. Have an awesome week. I know you got a lot of these dumb interviews that I'm sure you don't like doing on the way. So you go do that. We will see you in the cage with your arm raised. UFC 159 this weekend on pay-per-view. Good luck, my friend.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Bye.
There he goes. Alan Belcher going to be fighting Michael Bisping tomorrow night, UFC 159. You can play along on Twitter and Facebook by searching Wow Show and anything else that you need all weekend long. That's where you can find us. We'll be back. Check final news for this week. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans and Sean Desay from Triumph MMA, mourning the loss of country and music legend and icon George Jones passed away earlier today. So we will miss him and just wanted to pay a little homage to him. I know that there's a ton of people in the UFC and obviously in the world in general that will miss George Jones, I being one of them. Lots of news this week. Earlier in the week, Dana White said, hey, we've got this whole thing narrowed down. Looks like George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva is a lock. And then George St. Pierre went on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast, which if you're a GSP fan or even a GSP like apologist, I would say, or somebody who not really sure what you think about George St. Pierre, probably the most interesting interview you will ever hear done with the champ happens with Joe Rogan. And during that interview, Joe Rogan got George St. Pierre to say, hey, look, this would be a really tough fight for me to do just weight-wise. I walk around at 190 pounds and getting up to be enough weight to be heavy enough to fight Anderson, I'm not really sure. Plus, I feel I still have some stuff to do at 170. That said, if he was going to take a super fight, he would prefer to maybe drop down to 155 and fight Benson. Doesn't matter, though. He is going to fight Johnny Hendricks next, in his own words. And Dana said this week that that fight possibly could take place in August. And we talked about it in segment two, Daniel Cormier's performance at UFC on Fox 7. Not the most amazing performance, but still putting away a champion in the heavyweight division, a big deal. And Dana says, of course, we know you're not going to fight Cain Velasquez, but if you want to jump down to 205, you could have an immediate title shot. Now, timing is going to be the big issue here. As Cormier has said, he has to figure out a way to get down there. If you forget his story, last time out for the Olympics, he was at 211 pounds and his body essentially quit on him. He can't have that happen if he wants to get down to 205. So we'd have to do it the right way. He'd have to do it the healthy way, and would tape up to 8 or 9 months. Not sure if he wants to be away that long. If he does want to be away that long and it matches up, he could be the next one to face John Jones if John Jones walks away this weekend, the champion. And there are a lot of people out there that think it's just a done deal, that he's going to walk away as champion. And even some people saying that this weekend's pay-per-view is not worth buying because the title fight is a joke. If you were one of those people, I totally understand where you're coming from. I, for one, think that Chael Sonnen has done a lot of work, verbally anyway, to get people interested in this fight. Does he have a chance? I think everybody in the sport has a chance at one point or another. But let's not be silly. John Jones is certainly one of the best in the business, and it could be a very, very quick night for Chael Sonnen. And if that happens, there is some rumors of retirement. He has debunked that, talking to Ariel Helwani yesterday on MMAfighting.com. However, if he has a terrible outing, I would imagine that that might be something he considers. All weekend long, follow us on Twitter and Facebook for the latest news coming out of the UFC this weekend for UFC 159. It is Way of the Warrior. We'll play some more John Jones and take off today. Catch you next weekend. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show powered by Gun Lake Casino and Onnit Supplements, online at onnit.com/wowshow. When all